From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. And on this day, we'll look at the school funding numbers from the state and what they mean, and the push for paid parental leave in Maine. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
The executive director of Maine's Republican Party, who's already under fire for his connections to an anonymous political attack website known as the Maine Examiner, is now admitting that he didn't file income tax returns for 2 years. The revelations are significant since the Maine Examiner recently took swipes at Lewiston mayoral candidate Ben Chin for failing to pay parking tickets. Portland Press Herald columnist Bill Nemitz broke this story, and we have him here in the studio to talk about it. Bill, I think a lot of people who follow politics know Jason Savage, but can you tell us a little bit more about him for those of us who don't know him?
Sure. Jason is the executive director of the Maine Republican Party. He's been in that position since 2013. Prior to that, I believe for 2 years, he ran an organization called People Before Politics, which was the offshoot of Governor LePage's transition team in 2010. And prior to that, he worked under Governor LePage when Governor LePage was general manager at Martin's Surplus and Storage. Jason worked for a number of years under him. So he's been very closely connected first with LePage and then with the Republican Party for quite some time.
And apparently Mr. Savage has had some troubles paying his taxes. Tell us what you found out and how.
Well, we had a lot of coverage last week about this website, the Maine Examiner, which is now the subject of a complaint before the Ethics Commission in Augusta over lack of identity of its authors, funding, things that need to be disclosed when politics or elections are in play. I wrote about that last Sunday, and on Monday I got an email from a reader who had been noodling around the internet, and he has expertise in matters of registries of deeds and that kind of thing. He saw that Mr. Savage lives in Enfield and just did a quick check of the Penobscot County Registry of Deeds, at which point he came across a number of liens that have been filed against Jason over the years. But the two that are of the most interest are for failure to file state income tax returns in 2013 and 2014.
And this person said that he was disgusted by the examiner's tactics. Do you believe that's why he came to you, or is there something else going on here?
I pressed him quite a bit on, you know, are you a Democrat? No, he isn't. Do you have any involvement with any of the groups involved in this? No, he didn't. My conclusion is that this is a reader who was following this story very closely, and because he is disgusted, as he put it, by the Maine Examiner, and because he does have, while an independent in terms of his voter registration, has a liberal bent, he did say that that was also a motivating factor. As to any other involvement directly in this whole saga, I saw no evidence of that.
For those who follow politics closely, as many of our listeners do, this is a pretty big story. This is an interesting story. For people in the general public, as you wrote this piece, why did you think those people would be interested, would care? Why is this important?
Well, I think one of the things that we've heard quite a bit from the Maine Republican Party over the past number of years, particularly since Governor LePage took office, is this kind of constant demand for accountability and in some cases demonization of people who are receiving any variety of public benefits, and this kind of burden of proof that's thrust upon them that they have to prove that they're not bilking the system. And it's been a fairly steady mantra. It's been one that Jason Savage himself has been at the center of. And I think what his case tells us is that you never know who's struggling. You never know who's having a hard time getting by. And if nothing else, the situation in which he finds himself right now might be instructional to people who are very quick to jump to judgment of those who are faring less well than they are.
And going from that, Jason Savage did not agree to speak to us for this, but in a statement he said his tax situation is, quote, a piece of fallout from very difficult issues that arose in my private life over a period of several years. I have been working hard to resolve this matter for many months and expect to have it taken care of in the coming weeks. Bill Nemitz, thanks.
My pleasure, Nora.
School districts across Maine found out yesterday how much money they're getting from the state to help fund education next year. Based on the preliminary numbers, the Department of Education will give districts more than $1.1 billion, and many schools will get additional funding for areas like special education and vocational training. But as Robbie Feinberg reports, the extra money also comes with an added burden that has some local officials concerned.
The state has made a lot of changes in how it pays for schools over the past year. Arguably, the biggest change was a budget deal reached last summer that added about $162 million towards education over 2 years. The Department of Education says the added money is going towards various changes next year, including boosts to public preschool and students with disabilities. Education Commissioner Robert Hassan says the ultimate goal of many of these policies is to reach disadvantaged students and provide more equity in education across the state.
But the end result is that students are able to achieve at a higher level in all areas.
Districts are still poring over the new figures to determine what they mean. But on the whole, it appears that many communities will see more funds for the upcoming school year, particularly districts with higher numbers of English language learners and students with disabilities. Lewiston, for example, will receive an additional $1.6 million for just special education. RSU 39 in Caribou is also seeing an increase, and that's a good thing, says Superintendent Tim Doak.
You know, hopefully this is a different year for us, and hopefully we can continue to go forward with this money and put it to good use for the communities and for the schools.
But not everyone is celebrating.
It was widely advertised by the legislature and the Department of Ed what a windfall local districts will be receiving this year. And that's not the case. I mean, we're down.
Mary Nash is the superintendent of SAD 35 in Elliott, near the New Hampshire border. She says she's still sorting through much of the new data. But she says on its face, it's not good for her district. Nash says for many reasons, including because SAD 35 has fewer students who are disadvantaged or who are in special education, it could lose more than $400,000 from the state this year. Nash says that means the district will likely be looking at a range of options to make up the shortfall, which could include cutting staff.
That's what we're trying to do, is make the very best choices that we can, given the limited options that we seem to have in terms of dollars.
Other school officials say the increase in state funding comes with another challenge, too. This year, the state has increased the local property tax rate that towns must pay in order to receive the full state subsidy. That has some school officials nervous about approaching residents for even more money. In Lewiston, Superintendent Bill Webster says he's thankful for an increase in funding from the state. But in order to receive all the funds, the city may need to increase some taxes by a substantial amount, as much as 5%, Webster says.
In Lewiston's case, that's an extra $1 million that has to be raised locally.
Districts will have the next few months to plan out their budgets and get them approved by school boards and local voters. And many say the increased state subsidy should make that process a bit easier. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
In President Trump's State of the Union speech last night, he emphasized the need to invest in the workforce.
And let's support working families by supporting paid family leave.
Paid maternity leave is an idea that has been around for decades, but currently only a third of employees offer that benefit. Proposals at the national and state level would expand access to paid leave, but opponents say a mandate would be bad for business. Patty White has more.
When Kathleen Fleury first took a job at Down East Magazine in 2007, the company offered 1 week of paid parental leave. Fleury pushed for more, and by the time she had her second child, Down East offered 3 weeks. But even after extending that leave with sick and vacation days, she says she returned to work exhausted and stressed.
Even in a great situation, and I consider myself to have a great situation, I have a supportive partner, I have a job that I love, that, you know, pays well, and I love going into, even in that scenario, you know, I was like a crying mess at 7 weeks.
Still, Fleury was in a better situation than most working mothers in the U.S. Federal law only requires employers to provide 12 weeks of unpaid time off for most workers. And Eliza Townsend of the Maine Women's Lobby says the U.S. has a long way to go to catch up with the rest of the world.
The United States and Papua New Guinea are the only two countries that offer no form of paid leave whatsoever.
Townsend says the arrival of a new baby or a serious medical issue shouldn't mean you have to go without a paycheck. A proposed bill before the Maine legislature would create a program that covers 8 weeks of both parental and medical paid leave at two-thirds the rate of pay. And Townsend says just like unemployment or Social Security benefits, the program would be funded through a payroll tax.
Into which each worker pays a small amount, really pennies out of your paycheck, to create a system from which you can draw in the event of a major life event.
The proposal would exempt businesses with 15 or fewer employees. But opponents object to a mandate that could increase administrative costs for thousands of employers. David Clow is the Maine State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business.
We think that employers should get to decide, period.
Cost is also a concern for the Maine State Chamber of Commerce. Spokesman Peter Gore says it's not clear how much it would take to fund the program and to ensure that it remains solvent.
We think it would be wise if the state is contemplating moving forward with a new state agency that would have a charge of hundreds of millions of dollars to undertake an actuarial study.
The chamber is not taking a position on the bill. But ideally, Gore says, paid leave policy would be enacted at the federal level. There is a proposal in Congress to create a social insurance system that would provide 12 weeks of paid family leave. It's co-sponsored by Independent Senator Angus King and backed by Democrats. But another proposal also has the support of conservative policy experts.
We would like, at the federal level, for there to be an 8-week parental leave policy.
Aparna Mathur is with the American Enterprise Institute, which partnered with the Brookings Institution to release a recommendation last summer. Like the Maine proposal, funding would come through a payroll tax.
We also said that it should come with job protection. So what we see at the state level in places like California is that because the paid leave policy doesn't come with job protection, a lot of low-wage workers are really left out of the policy. They're rushing back to work, you know, as soon as possible.
Mathur says the lack of family-friendly policies like paid parental leave is part of the reason the number of women who work in the U.S. has stalled in recent years. But some businesses are embracing paid leave policies on their own. L.L. Bean, one of the largest employers in Maine, will provide both mothers and fathers up to 6 weeks of paid parental leave starting in February. Portland-based Avesta Housing also added a paid parental leave benefit this year, 8 weeks for birth mothers and 4 weeks for other parents. Avesta President Dana Totman.
We really wanted to respond to what today's workforce wants and needs. It certainly will help us both, we think, retain and attract good employees.
Kathleen Fleury, who's risen to become editor-in-chief of Downeast Magazine, credits her company's decision to adopt family-friendly policies for allowing her to advance her career and have a family.
I'm so grateful because I love my job. I love our magazine. I love our company. I also love being a mom.
Fleury just had her third child. This time, company benefits give her 12 weeks of paid leave. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.